Let's open to 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel, right around chapter 9, I believe it is what we're going to read from first tonight. 1 Samuel chapter 9. It's good to see everybody tonight. Glad that we could be together and worship together. Always excited to be with you and stand in this pulpit. I'm really excited tonight to have a new brother in Christ. It's great to great news about Jackson, and we're so thankful for his decision. Jackson, we're so proud of you, and we are just looking forward to seeing how God uses you in the kingdom, and just so thankful for you and the great family that you have. 1 Samuel chapter 9. Did you know that we're in an election season? Anybody aware of that? You know, when it comes to election time, you might be just now kind of getting plugged in as to what's going on, or you could be like me and you just follow it all the time and want to know what's going on. But, you know, when it comes to election season, we always have a choice, whether it's for president or senator or governor or congressman, whoever it is, and whatever race we're talking about, we're always, most of the time, presented with a choice. We have a choice, and we might make the choice about who it is that we're going to vote for based upon a number of different things. We might look at some issues that are very important to us, like the economy or health care, or it could be that we make our decision just based solely upon maybe a person's personality or whether or not they have any sort of charisma. And it's a decision that we all make. You know, when you think about the decisions that we make in the voting booth, they do, in some sense, affect our lives. They really do. They affect our lives. And I'll just stop and say, I'm not getting political tonight. I don't have any business doing that in the pulpit. But I want to make the point that while we might stress and spend a lot of time making a decision about who it is that we're going to vote for, I think a greater decision that we have in our lives that affects our lives every day is the decision when we wake up, of what type of person are we going to be? Who are we going to be like? Who are we going to emulate? Well, tonight, I want us to look at a couple of political figures, not presidents or senators, but two kings of Israel that are mentioned in the Old Testament. And I want us to think about which one of these kings would we rather be like? That's the question I want to put before you tonight, and I'll put it before you as we wrap up the lesson. When you think about these two men, of course, you see here, we're talking about David and Saul. Saul, the first king of Israel, and then David. And in many respects, these two guys are a lot alike. They're both chosen by God to lead Israel. Both begin their reign with humility. Both reign over Israel for 40 years, and they reign a powerful and wealthy kingdom. And then we'll also see in a moment that both of them are great warriors. They have many victories on the battlefield, but that's about it. I think you'll see tonight that that's really where the similarities end. They certainly didn't look alike. Saul apparently looked like the kind of person that would, you know, maybe be on the cover of Time magazine, and he would just have that look of a person who was just a political figure and the kind of person that you might just want to vote for. Saul grew up on a farm, and he was probably strong and muscular. He was a good looking guy. In fact, in 1 Samuel chapter 9, we see in verse 2 that Saul was a handsome young man. There was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than he. And from his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. And if you flip over a chapter into chapter 10, you'll see in verse 23 of what this says about Saul as well. In 1 Samuel chapter 10 and verse 23. When he stood among the people, he was taller than any of the people from his shoulders upward. And so here is a guy who was handsome. He was a tall guy, and he is this leader that is chosen by God that takes the children of Israel and really unites them into this kingdom. I mean, few men were probably able to do what he did so well. He creates this army out of nothing. He wins battles with the power of God. He defeats enemies. And I think that's a key word. When you think about King Saul, just think about the word powerful. This is a powerful leader. Well, David, on the other hand, he was much different. And being the youngest of his brothers, I know something about that, of being the youngest in a house of being the baby, you don't get really a whole lot of respect. You don't have very much opportunity to lead anyone underneath you. You're typically the one being led. And you think about David being the youngest in his family. This is the situation that he is in. Now, David probably wasn't very tall, because it's interesting, in 1 Samuel chapter 16, in 1 Samuel chapter 16, when Samuel was sent to the house of Jesse to anoint him, in 1 Samuel 16 at verse 7, the text says this: "The Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look on his appearance or on the height of his stature, because I have rejected him. For the Lord does not see as man sees. Man looks on the outward appearance, but the Lord looks on the heart.'" God says, don't look at his appearance and don't look at his height and don't look at his stature. It seems to me maybe that God's saying, listen, yeah, I know David's short. I know he's not as tall as Saul, but that's okay. And I read something interesting one time about the heights of presidents. And that it was just an interesting thing that stood out to me, that taller presidential candidates on average won more often than the shorter candidates. Now, not all the time, but on average, the taller candidate was the one who typically won the race. And I thought that was interesting. And this is why God says to Samuel, David's not the tallest guy around, but that's okay. Because he is the one that I have chosen. He is the one that I want leading my people. Now, David would eventually gain a great reputation. David would eventually be very successful on the battlefield. And the people would certainly sing their songs about him. But David liked to sing as well. David seems to be the type of guy who would rather, you know, play his instrument than fight. In fact, you see in 1 Samuel, you know the story in chapter 17. I mean, David, as a youth, as a young man, I mean, he's just carrying a slingshot is what he had. And so as a shepherd, he spent a lot of time with sheep out on the fields and singing and playing his songs and practicing, obviously, with his sling. And on occasion, he would use that sling to protect his flock from wild animals. And before long, there came that, as I mentioned, that old man searching for David. And his name was Samuel. And God anointed him as the next king of Israel. And I think it's interesting, in 1 Samuel chapter 16, what this says in verse 13. In 1 Samuel chapter 16, in verse 13. "Then Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the midst of his brothers. And the Spirit of the Lord rushed upon David from that day forward." And you might think, right there at that moment, well, that's when David's life just changed immediately. I mean, all of a sudden, he's been anointed by God. I mean, his life's going to be great from this day forward. But if you know the life of David, you know it didn't quite work out that way, did it? The truth is, David seems to be more destined for heartache and suffering than he had ever known before, and probably more than he ever dreamed of. The Lord had a lot in store for him. Really, there was probably times, as we'll see, when David was in the cave, that he might have just wished that God would have left him out in the field and not anointed him to be the king of Israel. But as I mentioned, we see in the text that Samuel went home and Jesse, David's father, would send David to check on his brothers. And as I mentioned, David at times would kill wild animals. But there was that time when David went to check on his brothers, and it wasn't a wild animal that he killed with his slingshot. It was this wild giant that he used his slingshot to kill. And as a result of this feat, David now finds himself in this situation where he's the hero. Now remember, Saul's king at this point. David has been anointed by God to be the next king. David takes down this great giant Goliath. David becomes this great hero. And now all the people are singing songs about David and his accomplishments. And then David finds himself in a unique position where he is in the palace of the king. But when David enters the palace of the king, he is in the palace of what seems to be a mad king. Maybe the reason why is what we read in verse 14, the next verse in 1 Samuel 16. It says, "Now the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and a harmful spirit from the Lord tormented him." So this is what David walks into. Now David, because of his musical ability, was called in to help. And in the midst of some very difficult circumstances, David, as a young man, he learned some important lessons in this palace. And you see in verse 23 that David would sing songs for the mad king. It says, "Whenever the harmful spirit from God was upon Saul, David took the lyre and played it with his hand. And so Saul was refreshed and was well, and the harmful spirit departed from him." And so what do you see in David here? What do you see in Saul? Well, you see Saul, who is tormented, and then you see David, who's this great help. He's this great encourager. He seems to be faithful to the king. He's playing his instrument, helping Saul, who was distressed. He responded to the challenge of Goliath. He killed the giant. He's eventually put in charge of Saul's army. And remember the time, there was one occasion where he killed 200 Philistines in order to gain the hand of Saul's daughter in marriage. And Saul just required 100. And David was more successful than all the rest of Saul's soldiers against the Philistines. And there's a statement in chapter 22 of verse 14 that I think stands out, where Ahimelech later says this to Saul. He says, "Who among all your servants is so faithful?" What a phrase. That's a great compliment to David. But Ahimelech says, "Who among all your servants is so faithful as David?" And so you think about that statement. Well, you would think that David that Saul would love to have David around. That David would be the type of person that Saul would want right in his cabinet, right in his administration, right there for the daily briefings. I want to know what David thinks. David seems to be pretty successful, but of course, that's not what happened. While Saul at one time looked favorably at David, what would happen over time due to the success of David, Saul would become very jealous of David, which created hatred in the heart of Saul. Why? Well, of course he felt threatened. He felt threatened by David, as kings would do. Look at this new rising star coming up the ladder, and David's having all this success, and Saul's thinking, well, wait a minute, he could really make a play for my throne, and I need to do something about it. I need to get him taken care of. Well, in 1 Samuel chapter 18, turn a few pages over in your Bible, you see in 1 Samuel chapter 18, this becomes obvious one day as David was coming home from war. 1 Samuel chapter 18 of verse 6. 1 Samuel 18 of verse 6 says, "As they were coming home, when David returned from striking down the Philistine, the women came out of all the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul, with tambourines, with songs of joy, and with musical instruments. And the women sang to one another as they celebrated, 'Saul has struck down his thousands, and David his ten thousands.'" Now, David didn't like that. It says Saul was very angry, and this saying displeased him. And he said, "They have ascribed to David ten thousands, and they've only ascribed to me thousands. And what more can he have but the kingdom?" And then watch this phrase. "And Saul eyed David from that day on." You see, at that moment, Saul knew that David was a threat to his kingdom. And of course, he didn't understand that God would be left up to decide who it is that's going to be king, and which king would survive and which kingdom survives. And so as Saul grows in his jealousy and hatred for David, look at what happens in verse 10. "The next day, a harmful spirit from God rushed upon Saul, and he raved within his house while David was playing the lyre, as he did day by day. Saul had his spear in his hand, and Saul hurls the spear, for he thought, 'I will pin David to the wall.'"
Here is King Saul, filled with so much jealousy and anger and hatred toward David, that he just decides in this moment of rage, I'm going to throw this spear through David and pin him to the wall. It might be hard for us to imagine that. This is the Lord's anointed. Saul was chosen by God, as we mentioned earlier. But when you think about it, God's people have always ranged from those who were filled with power and pride, much like Saul, to those who are filled with humility and submission, much like King David. And so while he was in King Saul's palace, David learned a lot. There's a lot of lessons that he learned. But as the king just seems to increase in his madness, David seems to grow in his understanding. Because I want you to think about this. Just think about this from David's perspective reading this. You got the king throwing a spear at you, trying to pin you to the wall. And so question, what do you do when someone throws a spear at you? Yeah. Well, we might think that seems kind of like a strange question, right? Everybody knows what you do. If somebody throws a spear at you, what do you do? If he misses, you pick the spear back up and you throw it at him, right? And in doing so, you'll prove a lot of things. Oh, you might prove that you have courage. You might be trying to make the point that I stand up for what is right and boldly stand against that which is wrong. Or you might prove that you're big, bad, and tough, and you're not going to let anybody push you around, that you don't stand for unfair treatment. And all of these attributes combined will prove you might be a candidate for kingship. But all after the image of King Saul. You see, unlike anyone else in the history of throwing spears, David seems to not really know what to do when a spear was thrown at him. I do know that he didn't throw the spear back at Saul. He didn't make a spear of his own. He didn't go grab his old faithful slingshot and throw a stone at David. All he does is dodge. And it says in verse 11 of 1 Samuel chapter 18, at the end of that verse, it says, David evaded him twice. David evaded him twice. And when I read this story, I thought of Romans chapter 12, verse 19. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. And this verse 21 says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Now, I share this story in particular with you because you might find yourself in a situation, maybe much like David. It may be that, like David, you've found yourself in a situation where spears, so to speak, are being thrown at you from all different directions. There could be somebody who's trying to pin you to the wall. And they have evil feelings, ill feelings towards you. They want to hurt you. They want to harm you. They want to make you suffer. They want to smear your reputation. If you find yourself in that situation, or at some point you might, I want us to pay careful attention to David's reaction here because I think we can learn a lot from his experience. While King Saul was trying to kill David, the only thing that he really succeeded in doing seemed to be to shape and mold David into the kind of king that God wanted to have and that God could use. You see, while Saul was throwing the spears, David was growing closer and closer to God. Now, eventually, Saul chases him out of the king's palace. He runs and he hides from Saul. He spends a lot of time in caves. Caves are not an ideal place. That's not where you want to live. It's not a nice place to stay. They're dark, wet, cold. And that's bad. But I would imagine that in those moments while David was being hunted, that David sang a lot. He had those memories of the times when he was a shepherd. He remembered what it would be like to sing in the fields. But at this point in time, David's greatest ambition is just trying to stay alive. He just wants to stay out of King Saul's line of sight so he doesn't kill him. And so David sang. He cried and he sang. He knew he was being hunted. And it's in moments like that that we read how David writes some words that have comforted people for years and years. Like Psalm 13 of verse 1. How long, O Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I take counsel in my soul and have sorrow in my heart all the day? How long shall my enemy be exalted over me? Or feel the pain in Psalm 6, in verse 6. I am weary with my moaning. Every night I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with weeping. My eyes waste away because of grief. It grows weak because of all my foes. And just think about David. He's on the run. Sometimes his pursuers get close. Sometimes they even find him. Sometimes he seems to just stay a step ahead of them. And David on the run as a fugitive, probably trying to find whatever food he can find as he goes. He's crawling through mud. I mean, just to get the idea that this was David's darkest hours. And we know for the rest of the story that this is pre-king. We know that eventually David takes the throne. But think about David. At this point, he didn't know that. He knew he'd been anointed by God. But he finds himself in this situation where it's the darkest days of his life. As he says, I have grown weary because of all my foes. And I find it interesting that others had to flee the king's madness as well. And in 1 Samuel 22, they meet up with David. 1 Samuel 22, verse 2. Everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him, and he became commander over them. And there were with him about 400 men. And so all these men together come to David. And what are they doing? Well, they're fleeing King Saul as well. They know that he's mad and out of his mind. And then in chapter 23 at verse 14, it says this of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 23 at verse 14. David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. I mean, think about this. Every day, David is running for his life. King Saul is after him. And this is why, with that in mind, this is why David has a couple of opportunities and a couple of times where he really confuses these men that are with him. Because on two occasions, in 1 Samuel 24 and in 1 Samuel chapter 26, David has an opportunity in a cave and in a field to get rid of Saul. You've got this guy that's been trying to kill you, throwing spears at you. You've been on the run. You have an opportunity to take him out. In fact, in 1 Samuel 24 at verse 4, David's men says this. They say this, here is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you. Well, then David, it says, he gets up and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe. That's it. David had an opportunity to seek revenge on Saul, but he chose not to. And then, as I mentioned, a couple chapters later, in chapter 26, David had another opportunity where Saul was sleeping. And again, he's encouraged to kill Saul, and David refuses. And can't you just imagine how these guys around David, how they're responding, how they're thinking about this? They're like, David, you've been on the run. He's been hunting you just like an animal. He's been hunting you. He's been trying to kill you. You've been hiding in caves and pits, everywhere you can go hiding. But tonight, he was at your mercy. You could have killed him and you did nothing. Why didn't you just end the years of misery and quit running? But David's response in 1 Samuel 24 at verse 6 was, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed. Or in chapter 26, at verse 10, David said, as the Lord lives, the Lord will strike him, or his day will come to die, or he will go down into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should put my hand against the Lord's anointed. David says, not up to me. He says, it would be better for him to kill me than for me to imitate his evil, wicked ways. This is King David. He says, I'm not throwing a spear. I'm not allowing anger and hatred to grow in my heart. I'm not seeking revenge, not now and not ever. And I wonder if the men around David really appreciated what he was saying in the example that he left. Saul was, in many ways, maybe a man to be envied. He was the anointed of one of God. He was the deliverer of Israel. He was head and shoulders above everyone else. He was full of power and authority. But when you think about Saul, you think about this mad king. You think about this wasted potential. He played the fool, his epitaph says, when he lost his life. He played the fool and erred exceedingly. I think about Matthew chapter 20 and verse 25, where Jesus said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant. Whoever would be first among you must be your slave." This was not Saul. This was David. And you think about the type of leaders that we need. The type of leaders that we need. Men in our homes, the type of leaders that we need in the church, and the type of leaders that we need in our world. Those who are filled with humility, not just power and pride. And even years later, this is interesting, this wasn't just a thing with King Saul. Remember the time when Absalom, David's son, makes a play for the throne, and David is pushed out of his kingdom. Once again, he's on the run. But even then, David thought it was better for him to be defeated or even killed than for him to be like his son or Saul. And in the process of all of this, I think it's interesting that the example that David set. That David set an example, and what I want you to see is that not so much in what he did, but in what he refused to do. He was a man who refused to throw spears. He was a man who refused to rebel against God's anointed. He was a man who refused to take advantage of a man who was in authority when he was vulnerable. David was a man who was willing to suffer. He was a man who was willing to lose everything. A man who was willing to give God the freedom to destroy the kingdom if that's what God wanted. And so as I close, I ask you this question. Which would you rather be? Would you rather be like Saul, filled with hatred, anger? Would you rather be throwing spears? Or would you rather be like David, a man described in Acts 13 as a man after God's own heart? See, Saul might have had this power. He might have been man's choice. But David was a man who had the heart of God. Which one would you rather be? And I hope we're all saying, David. I want to be like David. But before you say that, I want you to think about this. If you'd rather have the heart of God, if you'd rather be like David, remember that that's not always a smooth path. It may involve pain. It may involve someone throwing some spears at you. It may involve you going on the run. It may involve you hiding in caves. It may involve you living your life without ever getting answers to difficulties that you have. But if you choose to be like David, you can rest assured that whatever it is that you face, you'll grow closer to God and you'll develop a heart like God. That's the path that David traveled. It's even the path that Jesus Christ traveled. It's the example that Jesus left us. Think about how this compares to the story that we read. Peter says, "For what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was the deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but he continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. And by his wounds, we have been healed." Jesus set that example for us. So do you have the heart of Saul or for the heart of David. Do you seek to be a man after God's own heart? Or do you seek to be a woman after God's own heart? If so, that means you'll have an attitude of humility and an attitude of submission, that I will submit to the will of God. And if we can help you submit to the will of God tonight, if we can help you in your spiritual life, please let us know. Let's think about these things as we stand and sing.